all my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, live in studio on a cloudy Tuesday afternoon. Lot to get into today. Massive news coming from Kauffman. The Royals doing a massive switch up. Guys getting promoted. New GM is in. But first, Darren, how you doing?
Doing good. Doing much better than the Baltimore Ravens are going to be doing today or next Monday. So, you know, all is well on this end. And, yeah, there was some big news coming out of one Kauffman drive, I guess you could call it. And still not a fan of downtown baseball. Let me just put it like that.
Neither am I. We'll agree there. I'm not a fan of downtown baseball. Looks like there's going to be a push coming from Sherman to get that done. But the main takeaway was Dayton Moore moving up to president of baseball operations. J.J. Pecola is becoming the new GM. But they had a whole press conference. And what was interesting was any final decision.
Still comes from Dayton Moore.
Still comes from Dayton Moore.
So it's like.
Because J.J. Pecola was the assistant GM. And it basically sounds like they're just getting a pay raise, new titles, but not much is going to change.
So unless I'm mistaken, Dayton Moore was the GM.
Correct.
Who was the president or vice president or whatever?
They might not have had one. So,
it's just one of those things where you just get, you know, look, I'm not capping, but that's just like the Chiefs PR. You know, the vice president becomes the executive vice president of PR. Director becomes the vice president, but your job duties still remain the same. You might get a bump in pay, but your job duty pretty much remains the same.
I think a lot of it has to do with J.J. Pecola. He was the mastermind who implemented the new developmental process in the minor leagues. And as we've seen this year, the minor league system has been just incredible, from this young starting pitchers to all of a sudden, Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr. are absolutely raking, especially guys like Prado, Melendez, who have been in the system for a little bit now, who are really struggling. They have the developmental switch, the new thought process behind it. Pecola implemented it, and they're crushing it. So rumors were other teams around Major League Baseball were looking at trying to grab Pecola. I know the Phillies were one team who had rumors to be interested in trying to make him GM if that spot were to open up. So the Royals said, let's give him a pay raise, give him a new title. Even though stuff may stay the same this year, at least this way he's going to stay.
He's going to stay. I'm old school, man. I mean, I think they probably did that to drive the bargaining price up, to drive his salary up, which is, you know, it's good. I'm all for it. Always for somebody getting paid and for promotions and stuff like that. So, he should have learned and probably has learned a lot under Dayton Moore. Again, now for Dayton Moore to still make the final decision, I'm not really sure, you know, just how much of change is really coming about. Because if he's still going to be the final, ultimately, John Sherman is always going to be the final decision maker because he has to sign off on it. But be that as it may, if Dayton Moore still has it, then, you know, look, I've always trusted the moves that Dayton Moore does because, you know, it's turned into two pennants in a World Series championship. So
I think this is best case scenario. Dayton Moore still gets to be around. He's done a fairly good job, like you mentioned, the two pennants, although the consistent in-betweens have been abysmal. He still has brought a World Series to one of the smallest markets in Major League Baseball. You can never fault him for that. Again, J.J. Pecola, he was been tabbed as the mastermind behind a lot of the recent success in the minor leagues. If he was going to go somewhere, you got to pay him. So I like that John Sherman is not afraid to spend.
I think you pay him because he's
money.
Done a good job. I don't think you pay him because, you know, he threatens to leave. I mean, you know, first of all, you're not going to threaten a billionaire, oh, I'm going to walk away. Okay, fine. I'll just find somebody else to pay and put them in your place that can do analytics or anything else that you do. So, I don't want to read too much into it because, you know, the question would be is how long have they had this in mind? You know, because being on the Zoom call, It's just me. And I try to, again, I'm not trying to read much into it, but body language-wise, you know, Dayton Moore didn't look like he wanted to be there. I mean, that's just what I'm coming, you know, that's what I'm getting from the, you know, from the Zoom call. And I don't know if this was a way to, you know, I guess to keep from, as you would say, losing JJ and to risk, you know, possibly not firing Dayton Moore or anything like that. You give him a new title. It's kind of same responsibilities while, you know, adding a little money to this guy's bank account here and a title to his, you know, to his, you know, basically taking the assistant off of the assistant GM part. So, you know, he has that. He has it on his resume in case years down the line, something else opens up where he decides he wants to make a move out of Kansas City.
So John Sherman, CEO of the club now, says the club stadium lease ends at the end of the decade, so 2030. He said the club is conducting an internal process on options, focusing on community impact, economic growth, and activity for the region. I think those are all code name. We want to move downtown.
That's exactly what it is. And the other thing about it is Dave Helling got a chance to ask the question that I was going to ask is how much is this, you know, what's the taxpayer responsibility? Because, you know, first of all, you ask the taxpayers to vote for the renovation, which was almost, it was over $500 million. I think it was $575 million. They didn't vote for the rolling roof to go over both stadiums. Okay, that is what it is. But I guess 25 years, you know, perhaps longer. But it's just hard to tell somebody that you need a new stadium when the stadium that you have is perfectly fine.
It's a beautiful stadium. I love Kauffman.
You know, and so I don't know. I'm not for it. Look, if he wants to pay for it out of his own money, have at it. But don't expect me to be on board with, you know, and he tried to say the right things about it being, you know, cost effective and not, you know, doing anything, you know, for
it'll bring more
underserved
money in it. Yeah.
I mean, okay, you know, we got, you know, we get it. We get the whole PR spiel that you have to say to try to, you know, sound like you care about the poor folk, but you don't. I'm not a big fan of it, and I'm not going to act like I am when I'm not.
I just don't like a downtown stadium. I think it's also kind of crazy how, and I live in Overland Park in Johnson County, how we don't get any of the necessarily bills while Jackson County has to foot all of this. I think it's a little interesting how the whole dynamic works. Again, if Sherman wants to move it, I think he should be the one to have to pay at least the majority, if not all.
Man, because damn, he needs to pay all of it.
It's a beautiful stadium. Currently you have. It's in a great location. I get there's nothing around it, but as far as getting to and from the game, it's ideal. I don't like the thought of a downtown stadium. Kansas City, to me, doesn't have the downtown presence of a New York, of an LA, of a Miami. The tailgating is what makes Kansas City sports partly so great. That's what the fans go and enjoy. Moving it downtown, you're taking away part of the, I guess, culture to an extent of Kansas City, of the getting there early, the grilling, the barbecuing. Just to me, it's, I don't like it.
Well, not only that, God forbid what happens if another outbreak takes place and you have to shut things down. I mean, you got to shut down downtown. We already know parking is a mess as it is, even if you're just trying to go down there to enjoy Big 12 basketballs, you know, down at the T-Mobile Center.
NAIA was pretty good.
Yeah, well,
in the middle of COVID, we were pretty good.
It was pretty good. But I'm just not a fan of it, man. And I have no problem saying that I will work on any election campaign to keep it, you know, keep it from passing here in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, you and me, we'll do this together.
Let me do it, Sterling. You'll still get invited to the 1% stuff.
Well, I know that's how I do it. I'm from within. It's a fox in the hen house.
Cool. We do an inside outside deal.
I do want to talk before we get to last night's game, which was absolutely bonkers, absurd. Cleveland Browns center J.C. Tretter says he believes Kansas City Chiefs assistant coach Greg Lewis should be disciplined by the NFL for his role in a sideline skirmish, which Ronnie Harrison Jr. was ejected for. My comment would be, did you not see what happened? Yes, Greg Lewis pushed Harrison, but Harrison had his foot stepping on Clyde. It was a dirty Bush League play. Greg Lewis is like, dude, get out of here. Do not step on my running back. And then Harrison decided to go complete Bush League and went after Greg Lewis, who doesn't not wearing pads, it's a coach. I don't get how you could see what happened, what transpired, and say, yeah, the coach needs to be disciplined.
It's been hard watching the replay because initially, yeah, he does step on him, I think, when he's pushed out of bounds. And there's a point where I think, I don't know if it's Humphreys or Tooney that's just trying to pull him off of it. And like, I don't know if his leg gets caught up and, you know, maybe he's trying to get his leg out and it looks like he's stepping on him. Because for me, it's hard to see clearly. And I didn't see it live as it took place because I was on the line. Given a score update, that it's hard for me to really, you know, even looking at the replays, it's been hard for me to see exactly. Now, Greg Lewis did push him first. I mean, that's no doubt. But it's hard for me to see whether or not he literally purposely stepped on him to where that would, in turn, make Greg Lewis push him to try to defend his player and then get the push back. It's hard for me to have a definitive feeling about that because I can't tell from the replay that I've seen that that the defender for the Cleveland Browns may not have, I think he has a point to an extent. And well, not, I'm sorry, J.C. Treader, who is a union player president, may have a point about Greg Lewis being disciplined. Now, I don't think he's going to be disciplined or be fined. Obviously, the defensive back for the safety for Cleveland is not going to get suspended. He probably will get fined, but he won't get suspended according to the league. But I think they're going to go back, and I think they're really going to look deep into it. And we'll know, I think, by Friday whether or not Greg Lewis is fined or not.
Yeah, just to me, it was complete Bush League by Harrison. I get it. Greg Lewis probably shouldn't have gone in there. But at the same time, when you look at it live, when you look at it in replay – Harrison looks like he's stepping on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and he's saying, and Greg was like, dude, don't do that. You're wearing cleats. Do not step on our running back. So I don't have a problem with it. I get it. Players should be the ones to probably decide that. It should have been whoever the center was, whoever the offensive line was there helping him, Clyde up. But either way, I thought what Harrison did was complete and utter Bush League. Again, before we get to the game, this is what bad teams do. Carolina Panthers released their kicker, Ryan Sentozo, after one game, after Matt Rhule says, it's not a one-game tryout. So he gets one game, says before the game, it's not a one-game tryout. He misses one extra point. They still win 19-14, and he gets the boot. While the kicker they released, Joey Sly, went 3-for-3, including one from 49 yards, and was 4-for-4 in extra points for the Houston Texans. Bad teams do that. Just so you know, Joey Sly has been a fantastic kicker for multiple years now. They released him because he missed one long 49 field goal in the preseason. And by the way, the Panthers also had Harrison Butker at one point.
First of all, I don't have a problem with that because there were some kickers over the weekend that should have been released. Hell, if you look at it from the very first game, the Dallas' kicker should have been released. He missed, what, two kicks? I know he missed an extra point. I know he missed a field goal. He might have missed something else.
Sure. You're talking about the dude with the massive Greg Zuerlein.
Yeah.
Big leg. He also missed, it was a 60-yarder. You're not going to cut him for that. But the 35-yarder and the extra point were horrendous, 100%. He redeemed himself to an extent by kicking the, at the time, go-ahead field goal. Greg Zuerlein's also been a known entity for a long time. He's been around the NFL for a long time with the Rams. He has one of the biggest legs in football. He is more inaccurate than some, but he's had some huge kicks throughout his NFL career.
You know me, man. You got one job. You got
you
one job.
You expect kickers to be 100%, and that's just not fair.
No. I ain't saying 100%, but damn it. I mean, I need you to make a 35-yarder. I need you to make an extra point.
Sure. I mean, but no kicker goes 100%. Unless you're Justin Tucker. He's been ridiculous.
Justin Tucker or the kicker down in Tampa Bay who used to kick for the Chiefs.
Oh, I would take Harrison Butker over Ryan Suckup.
Well, look, they both got Super Bowl rings, so.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
So, be that as it may. Because Harrison Butker, look, don't think about all the – keep forgetting we're live on the air. Keep – let's not forget all the kicks that Bucker was missing last season.
And by all the kicks, you mean the games he still won for Kansas City with kicking absolute bombs. He was still probably the second or third best kicker in the NFL last year. Justin Tucker was first, and Jason Sanders for Miami was probably – you could probably throw in the top two as well because he was – I don't know if he missed a kick last year, Jason Sanders. He might have been perfect. They didn't have a lot of opportunities. They didn't use him like Harrison Bucker does, but the Chiefs used Bucker as a weapon because of his leg strength.
That's true. That's true. But again, you know, expectations are high, Sterling. I mean, and you would hope that as a kicker, when they know their only job is to make the kick.
I get it, but it's just, it's not, we're not playing Madden. It's not Madden on rookie mode. This is the real life. Not every kicker is that good. When you have a top three kicker in Harrison Bucker, who are they going to cut? Justin Tucker ain't coming here. You have the top three kicker. You can't complain.
I can't complain.
You can't because he's top three.
Yes, you can.
That'd be like complaining when Mahomes throws an interception going,
hold on.
He's MVP. He's the best quarterback in the NFL, but he threw an interception. You got to be better.
Bucker missed a Super Bowl winning kick, how would you feel?
I'd probably still say that's a top three kicker who missed a kick.
No, you understand.
That ain't Lynn Elliott.
Oh, your bar is low.
No, I'm saying you got to take the totality of a player's career. You can't just base off of one game.
So what you're saying is context.
Context matters. And Bucker has been clutch when it matters. It's not like he's a guy who shies away when the moment's big.
I have nothing against Harrison.
I know you don't.
Harrison Bucker is the cleanest dressed kicker I've seen this side of me. So, my man.
You ain't a kicker.
I used to kick when I was in high school. I loved it. I enjoyed it. Like, I love playing kickball. I just love kicking
the
ball.
Dude, we should go out and set up a field goal kicking contest, you and me.
Okay.
That seems pretty good. That'd be good for the brand.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. You know, good cardio.
Good promo. Good cardio. Good promo.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
It would be. But, look. I don't have a problem with Harrison Bucker. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great kicker. I just have high expectations where when it matters most, I know we can count on him. But I'm also like, dude, just some, you know, some. Now, we haven't had this problem yet this season because it's just one game in. But I don't want – because there were times last year where we thought something mentally was going wrong. You know, was up with Harrison Bucker?
It was with extra points. It was that 33-yard area.
How are you missing that, but you can hit
– it's mental. It's the yips.
Yards.
We talked about it. It was the yips. Yeah. Some guys figure it out. Some guys don't. Last night's game, Raiders beat the Ravens in an absolute wild bonkers game.
It was only wild for the last few minutes. I mean,
the first half was boring as hell. It was just boring. It was, 14-7, 14-10 first half. Completely boring, just an average run-of-the-mill game. Then fourth quarter happened. Then overtime happened. And anything that bad could happen did happen.
I was truly wondering, this is just me from watching the game. I was saying, because I was texting Lee just based off of our conversation we were having yesterday, because we thought, you know, said the Raiders were going to win. And
You said cover. You didn't say win.
They still covered.
They did cover. But you said cover. I asked you at the end of the
show. No,
you said, do Raiders win? You
money
go,
line? Yeah,
you
no.
go, give me the Lee points.
Lee was like money line. But I said for them to win. We said for them to win, it was going to have to go over, which it did. It was
it
60
did.
Points
yeah.
or so. But seriously, man, be that as it may, you know, looking at how Lamar Jackson played, because that first half, I'm sitting watching, I'm thinking to myself, how could anybody follow Derek Carr into, you know, into action? Because it's like his facial, his mannerisms, his throws, I was just like, dude, this is garbage, man. And I'm sitting thinking like, that's a beautiful stadium. I know the fans are just lit, you know. I know the
they're getting after it.
Yeah, they, you know, and it's like. And this is what you put out there on offense. Like, this is horrible, man. And Henry Ruggs, I don't know. I don't know if it was just first game jitters this year, sophomore jinx or sophomore slump. But, you know, for him to have the same type of speed as Tyreek, he was god-awful last night, man.
Yeah, Ruggs was
brutal. I mean,
he had
three catches. I think he had a good catch somewhere in the game. But I just
pretty
wasn't
late.
Impressed.
He had a good catch late. Henry Ruggs, it was, what, two catches for 46 yards. I'm looking at it right here. Ruggs has been a very big disappointment, especially considering the wide receivers that were drafted after him. For as fast as he is, he seems to have the same issues as Mecole Hardman, where because you were so fast in college, you could get open so easily, right? You get to the NFL, it doesn't always translate. They're both struggling to get separation is what it seems like to me.
But the only difference is that Henry Ruggs played and started Alabama.
Mecole was Georgia.
Hold on, look. I'm saying let's not mix in Alabama. It might be Georgia, but Alabama's still on a different level, especially with the amount of. Remember now, he was down there with Waddle, Devontae Smith. And so, I mean, he was down there with a lot of good players. And so he was able to catch balls and become an All-American and all that other good stuff. So what I'm saying is, you would think that, come on, man, you can catch balls. You know how to run routes because you had to be precise to be on that field if you play for Alabama. Because Nick Saban is just not going to put you out there just because you're fast.
No, I get that. I understand Ruggs definitely has a higher pedigree than Mecole Hardman, but what I'm saying is I think they both had similar issues where they were both so talented, both at top five programs in the nation. You think it's going to translate easily to the NFL skill set. It just hasn't yet for both of these guys. I do want to say...
No, I was going to say Darren Waller. He had 19 targets. But I'm going to be honest. He dropped a lot of passes. I think he had like 11 catches out of 19. But he dropped a lot of easy passes, man, which, you know, I was sitting thinking like, come on, man. Like last year you kind of ascended to damn near number two tight end behind Travis Kelce.
I think he is. I mean, if you're going to say in the pass game, yes. If you take it all in totality with George Kittle and his blocking, there's a reason why George Kittle doesn't get more catches.
Right.
They use him more in a blocking role. Darren Waller's not doing that as often.
Well, but also, Kittle was injured last year. So that's why I say he kind of ascended to the number two spot. And I was just thinking all the times that he was being targeted, like you trying to one-hand, and Derek Carr's like, come on, you got it. And again, I don't know if it's because the coach didn't have faith in him or he's just not a vocal person, because I think the only person who always has him as comeback player or MVP is his brother, David. And so, just watching the game, it's like, how could you be inspired by this guy?
I will say Derek Carr, Lamar Jackson, both were pretty fantastic in this game. Derek Carr throwing for 435 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Lamar Jackson was, in my opinion, very, very impressive. He worked on his pass game in the offseason. You could tell. Did you notice he was wider base? Did you notice his throws, tighter spirals? Just to me, Lamar Jackson.
Well, he could always throw the ball.
But not to this extent. Not in these tight of windows. Maybe it was just him trusting himself. Even his incompletions were incompletions in good spots. I was very impressed by Lamar Jackson this game. I get it, only 235 yards, but if you break the numbers down, it's only because he didn't throw the ball 50 or 56 times like Derek Carr. The average pass per attempt, 7.8.
Not only that, he had passes that were dropped too, and so his stat line should have been better. I will say this though, as much as we ragged on him, Sammy Watkins did look, you know, considering that, that he did. Considering that he didn't play preseason and he was off injured most of the time during training camp, to come back and to play in with you, I think he had 3 catches for like 86 yards or something like that.
4 for 96.
4 for 96. Okay, so he did well. It was good to see. I'm not gonna hate on him. It was good to see. And I'm wondering whether or not he's going to sum up his sleeve next week when Kansas City comes to town. He and, of course, now I'm not going to lie, Le'Veon Bell looks small on the sideline. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm, you know.
Not in the pads.
Not in the pads and not in his suit or whatever. Or, you know, he just, I was like, who is this dude? It's Le'Veon Bell. I'm like, what? Really? So, I don't know if he's going to, in the way.
Tyson Williams looked pretty soft.
Tyson Williams and then also, who was it, Latavius Murray?
Yeah.
You know. I don't know if Le'Veon Bell suits up next week.
Yeah, I would be surprised if Le'Veon Bell suited up next week. After what you saw from Tyson, he looked damn good. Lat Murray wasn't great, but he brings another element, just that ground and pound up the middle, which the Ravens love to use. I was just very impressed with Lamar Jackson, even in a loss, and I get it. A lot of it falls on him. That fumble was massive in overtime. That was basically the game. So he, as much as I'm saying he played a great game, he also blew it at the very end. But I just want to say I was very impressed at his growth, because if they want any chance, in my opinion, of being the second-best team in the AFC, I said, going into it, he has to go throw outside the numbers. He's going to have to hit his wide receiver. You can't only rely on Mark Andrews. He at least showed a little bit this game that shows, you know what, he's going to have to do it, especially with the plethora of injuries at running back. I was impressed.
The other thing you have to be concerned with, even though he was impressive, I had to get on somebody last night talking about Lamar Jackson has regressed. I'm like, regressed how? I'm like, he didn't have his receivers in preseason or training camp. So the fact that he's doing what he's doing now is pretty good.
Hey, 86 yards too. That was the over for you.
Huh, yeah. Oh, for who?
You, 86 yards rushing Lamar Jackson. We had it at 80, I thought.
I had it at 85, I think.
So you got it by one. Yeah. That's actually very funny.
Yeah. And so I lost Parlato because he only had two touchdowns instead of three total. Because I thought, you know, I figured he would run. So I thought he would run more. Especially when you got down to the goal line. But be that as it may, when it comes to that offensive line, though, Kansas City Chiefs, not that we had any reason to, but it's a good thing they didn't go after Villanueva, because he was manhandled by Nassib last night.
Yeah, Carl Nassib and Max Crosby were getting pressures time and time again.
Which should provide hope for Chiefs fans this weekend that it's going to be in Baltimore. With this defense, now, you know, if Frank Clark comes back and, you know, Chris Jones might be licking his chops, you might put Chris Jones on the same side as Villanueva and let him go after Lamar Jackson. So I think it's going to be a good game. Well, I expect all the games to be good with the Chiefs because they don't blow teams out no more. They like
keeping our blood pressure high.
Keeping our blood pressure high, our hair's turning gray. Money, you know, just on the table, just for the dealer to get, you know, just in case they don't hit the over, under, or the parlay. Yeah, Chiefs are something else. But going into this game, Sterling, it's going to be interesting to see when we talk to Andy Reid tomorrow what he saw from last night's game. That, and I don't expect him to tell us, but you know, perhaps he might let something loose that he sees that the team can capitalize on.
For me, the one area that I'm a little bit nervous is going to have to be Sammy Watkins and his speed. After watching L'Jarius Sneed and Tre'Davious Ward get burnt by David Njoku, I get it. He's a very athletic tight end for the Browns, but they got burnt by a tight end, right? That makes me a little bit nervous because Sammy Watkins looked healthy. He looked very fast. A guy had an angle on him. I don't know if it was KJ Wright or who. It may have been KJ Wright. The safety had an angle on Sammy, and he just blew by him. And I was very impressed. Sammy Watkins looked extremely good. And if his speed is going to be like that against Kansas City, I am a little nervous for the cornerback play after I saw them get at least a little bit beat by a tight end.
My only disagreement would be this, is that you go up against Tyreek and McColl and that speed every day. I mean, if we think there's no one faster than Tyreek, really, you would think, what's going up against Sammy Watkins going to do?
You would think. I mean, Schwartz, though, for the Browns, was giving them fits over the top. So, and again,
but Schwartz, I think, literally has Tyreek Hill speed.
He does. He ran a 4.2 something stupid.
And so Sammy, I think, is still a 4.4. So I'm saying, I mean, it's fast.
I get it.
It's fast. Don't get me wrong, but he still ain't Tyreek or Schwartz. So I can. But again, if you're going up against Tyreek every day in practice, you would think, in essence, that should be able to help you out as a defender when you know you're going up against somebody. Now, granted, you don't know where they're going to go. You don't know the route that they're going to run, but you should, that's more of a hip type thing where you keep your hand on their hip or, you know, so you can kind of move them in the direction that you want them to go. I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited. I will tell you that. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm eating while I'm up there.
Before we go to break and we talk more about Chiefs, Baltimore, and just Chiefs in general. Are the Raiders legit? Did this tell you anything about the Raiders, or is this just a team? They're basically home opener, new stadium, new city. Fans are finally there. They came out a little sluggish, and they turned it on late. Or is this just a one-off of?
I'm going to be honest, man. I posed this question because I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if the Raiders were that good or the Ravens' defense was that bad. It might have been whether or not the Ravens were this bad or the Raiders' offense that good. It was confusing because, again, there was really no flow until late into the ball game where things start going back and forth. And then the turnovers, of course, Lamar Jackson having two turnovers didn't really
– huge.
Did not help matters at all. Again, Derek Carr did nothing to inspire me. I mean, I'm sitting there on the couch trying not to fall asleep because I know we're going to talk about this, and I had to watch the game because we're playing this team next week. So it's like I got to make sure I'm paying attention and because I was switching channels between that and the Peyton Manning and Eli Manning broadcast. And
that was pretty entertaining.
That was interesting to say the least. But, it's – I think the Raiders can be good, but they do too many Raider stuff that will.
The
false penalties,
start was it third and one or?
And you know what? That's what I was texting Levi. I'm like, man, but the Raiders keep doing Raider stuff. Like, just when you thought they were going to win the game, they had a turnover in the end zone in overtime. It's like, come on, man, seriously.
Yeah, the Raiders really shot themselves in the foot multiple times. If it wasn't for Lamar Jackson in that fumble, and again, give the Raiders credit, but Lamar Jackson looked like that was more on him than anything else. They might not have won that game. Also, the Ravens, this is why you play to win the game and not play to not lose the game. Fourth quarter, you saw them get kind of tight that last possession when they probably should have kept going instead of trying to kick a field goal with Justin Tucker, right?
They did just what Cleveland did.
But it's so easy in today's NFL to move 40 yards because the kickers are long legs now. They're kicking 55-plus yarders in 25 seconds. I mean, that's very doable, especially when you play the prevent D. So the Ravens played not to lose. In my opinion, they should have played to win, and I think that was what really bit them too. We'll take a quick break. Darren and Sterling here, ESPN Kansas City.
Hi, Ollie Gates here. The Gates family would like to say thank you for allowing us to serve you for 75 years, a milestone which would not have been possible without your support. Thanks again, and remember, whatever the case may be, keep the faith.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com.
I was really hoping this was the instrumental.
Oh, yeah, dude, we can't play.
Yeah, I just thought. Hey, man. Woo, I love the song.
That's a great song, but you can't play the...
I know, you can't play the first. That's why I was just like, God.
Jay-Z and Eminem, no, that's... If you hear Jay-Z and Eminem, both those names, that's bad for radio. That's FCC coming in, banging down, flying in through windows.
This is one of the times you're hoping that Chad's not listening to the show, not in the office. Like, let me see what they got going on down here right outside my office.
Because we're renegades.
Facts.
So, Chiefs, Ravens, next week, week two.
Sunday Night Football. My hotel is 5 minutes from the stadium. I'm enjoying the fact that I could technically walk. I actually just might do that too, just to, you know, have, because I'll have my book bag. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to walk in my suit like that.
Depends on the weather, man. If it's hot, chance. If it's a little cooler, you might swing it.
Yeah, I got to pick up my credential and parking pass tomorrow for Baltimore. So I'm looking forward to it. Haven't been to that stadium before. I think it's M&T Stadium.
Yeah.
I literally am staying, I think, two blocks from Camden Yards. But as Lebo said yesterday, there's no baseball game on this weekend. So out there. So
I don't know if you want to see Baltimore Orioles baseball anyways.
Well, you know, just go to a different ballpark.
And, no, it would be cool. Camden Yards – is a ballpark that I would love to see.
Because I was like, get your boy credential, because, you know. I mean, Sure. About cool. there.
Cedric Mullins is having a great year for him. I got John Means, local kid, pitching.
Wonder what else I can do while I'm out there. I mean, going to the casino is easy, but I'm just thinking, what else? What else might there be to do for
you? Gotta be some history. It's Baltimore. There's gotta be some pretty cool
history.
Well, there's
Babe Ruth.
Well, just even like city history as far as maybe initial U.S. type of stuff.
I do have all day Saturday and early part of Sunday because I still watch my football. Oh, gosh. I just realized I might be an hour and a half, too. I'm an hour ahead.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be
8:20 game. Yeah, 8:20 game.
So I'm just thinking, like, man, I gotta be at 3:00. I'm like, then I'll be there 4 or 5 hours early.
That's not bad.
Well, so look, if I'd stayed further, yes, I'd be rushing. Sure. But since I can literally walk, which I'm not, but if I wanted to, you know.
I'd take a stroll,
might take public transportation, might even take an Uber or something.
I'm going to the Buffalo game.
What?
Bought my tickets today.
The game is here.
I know that.
I mean, you make some of you travelers.
Well, you know I'm stoked. It's Josh Allen, Mahomes. Come on. You know I'm stoked for that.
I guess, dude. Yeah.
Gonna watch it. Fan. Stadium, Arrowhead.
Where's your seats at?
Nat and I got him, my girlfriend. We got him right behind end zone. Right lower level.
Oh.
We splurged a little bit. It was splurging.
Now I see people now when Sterling jokes about 1%.
It was a good deal.
Wasn't no good deal.
It was a great deal.
How much was it? Yeah, exactly.
It was a great deal.
Exactly.
It was a great deal.
Money. It was a lot of money because
it wasn't cheap, but first of all, for the tickets, it was great.
I looked at StubHub today because I was talking about the game with somebody. The cheapest ticket I think was $175, and that's up there. So
that's what I'm saying. We got a good deal. Mm-hmm. $250 for end zone right there. That's a good deal.
$250 a piece.
Yeah. Mm. It's expensive, but. If you go to one game a year,
if you go to one game a year, it will probably be Green Bay. Now, for a lot of fans, the most expensive ticket is still the Dallas Cowboys here. I'm still trying to figure out.
Why are Cowboys fans?
Because they travel. I mean, there's Cowboys fans everywhere.
No, I'm stoked, though, because I get to see Josh Allen, who I love. And in my opinion, these are the two best teams in the AFC.
I mean, after this past weekend, I'm not sure how you could credibly say that.
Hey,
but whatever.
One game is not a season, Darren.
Oh, but this is the same guy who tries to just Teddy Bridgewater buy that over Drew Lock.
One game is not the season, Darren.
All right.
Drew Lock's got more.
Whatever.
Actually, that was the last game I went to. It was Broncos snow game, but Drew Lock was there.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. I was on the field. Not that I'm flexing or anything like that.
Raheem Mostert to have season injury surgery for the 49ers, which is, my goodness, how many running backs are going to get hurt this year? And also, it seems like the Niners consistently have running backs who get hurt, but they had a sixth-round rookie come in, go for
plus yards.
Yeah, and was just outstanding. The Niners scheme, their system, what Shanahan does out there, it's absurd.
Yeah, but you should wonder, you should ask the question, why is it they can't keep their players healthy, though?
I think it's – I mean, you say the same thing about Baltimore. Say the same thing about the Chargers. Say the same thing about the
Baltimore
Cowboys last
freak
year.
Injuries. I think those are more
sure.
freak injuries. Because Mostert, wasn't he hurt last year?
I'm
pretty sure all their running backs were out last year.
They were all – Mostert's getting season injury. They thought he could get 8 weeks, but he decided to go full on for his career, for his health, because he would have to get surgery at the end of this year too, and he could make it a lot worse. So he's getting a full meniscus surgery. Season ending. Other running back, Ronald Jones for the Buccaneers, after getting benched last week, is scheduled to start.
Until he fumbles again. That's – but I – Tom, you know, he must have sent Brady some flowers or something, because I'm pretty sure the only reason why he's starting is because Tom Brady allowed him to do so. Because I think, who was it, had Leonard Fournette not had that bobble that ended up going to becoming an interception, he might have been starting. But be it as it may, you know, it's good for him. Hopefully he learned, he takes better care of the ball. And in this weekend's matchup, who do they play? Who do the Patriots play this week?
Let me look it up.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Week two, we got NFL football. Week two, Giants, Washington is Thursday night.
Jets. So
no, that's the Patriots, dude.
You said Pats.
No, I said who did the but we're sitting talking about Jones.
Oh, well, that makes way more sense. That's
the
why.
Oh, they play the Falcons.
I was very confused.
Oh, they play the Falcons. Oh man.
Well, now you see why I was confused. Yeah, at home, Atlanta looked absolutely horrendous. Eagles are a bad team, and the Eagles hammered the Falcons. Falcons looked just absolutely horrendous. Matt Ryan, you know what? I don't even know if I can put it all on him. Do you see the offensive line performance?
Yes.
Of the Falcons?
Yes.
Holy hell. They had chalk outlines around Matt Ryan. It looked like in the middle of the game. It looked like a murder scene.
I haven't been impressed with the Falcons since they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots 3 years ago.
And even then, it was kind of like the Falcons were just there. How did the Falcons get here?
No, they were a good squad. I mean, Matt Ryan was the MVP that year. I mean, they were a good squad. Yeah, I mean, and they had a 23 lead. It was, you know, I was just dumbfounded. But Belichick, it's funny because listening to the Mannings last night, he talked about how there is no quote-unquote such thing as a halftime adjustment. But you would, yeah. You know, but somehow, some way, the Patriots made a halftime adjustment, and the defense played lights out and kept them from scoring again in the second half. Yeah, this looked like it would be a good week to make a nice little parlay where you could basically just go off the quarterbacks and just do like some of the bare minimums. But put like this, Dak Prescott, they play the Chargers. You know, it's going to be a highly pat. That's going to be him and Justin Herbert. I will put them down for number of completions. Dak Prescott, probably yardages. I'll probably put him down for 350 yards or whatever.
Ooh.
Hell, he throws for damn near 400 every game now. I mean, that's.
Yeah, but see, you got to game on, game off. You got to.
But the thing is that Cowboys are generally behind. So if you're trying to bring him back, you're going to be throwing the ball. Justin Herbert, I think because the game's at home, their home opener, I think he'll fling the ball
Surprising,
around.
Surprising, Eckler did. I don't think he caught a pass last week, which was very surprising considering he is the premier pass receiving back in the NFL. Also, Larry Roundtree, former Mizzou running back, got a lot of carries for the Chargers last week.
I'm not going to lie. I expect Tom Brady to throw for almost 400 yards again against the Falcons defense.
Yeah, Falcons defense is horrendous.
So
unless they get up so much, then they're just going to run it.
You
got to think about that, too.
Who?
Well, if the Bucks get up so much, they're going to start running the ball.
Now, Bruce Arians like to throw that thing.
He does.
He like to throw that thing. And then, you know the Chiefs are going to throw the football against the Ravens Sunday night. So, you know that's going to – and look, you think about some of the rookies, Broncos, Jaguars, you know they're going to
– Dog, what was Urban Meyer doing? Urban Meyer was going to throw out Trevor Lawrence's arm. You know me, I'm all for pass-happy offenses, but week one, game one with a rookie quarterback, not a great offensive line. And how many times did he throw that game? Especially early?
He threw it a few times. Look, Rams, Colts, you know Matthew Stafford's going to throw the ball around. Now, I ain't going to lie, Texans, Browns, that's going to – you get Teddy Bridgewater against Tyrod Taylor. That's going to be interesting to see how many yards they throw against each other. But, I'm tripping. Texans, Tyrod's going against his old team, the Cleveland Browns, against Baker Mayfield. I'm tripping. I'm sorry.
What year is this, 2017?
What's that?
Tyrod Taylor with the Browns, 2016? What year is that?
2018.
Is it that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was
it. Also, Trevor Lawrence had the ball 51 times week one, game one as an NFL quarterback. 51.
Now, here's another one you put into a parlay. Got to see what Josh Allen's going to do because he had a poor game. And the loss at home last week. Now they're on the road to Miami. Will he try to chuck the ball around on that?
Yeah, Miami's defense is good too. They got a lot of good players in the Miami defense. But I could also see Josh Allen coming out pissed. I could see Josh Allen running the ball a lot, coming out and trying to truck dudes because he has that ability.
There's one game I'm looking forward to seeing the early slate: Raiders and Steelers. You know, because the Steelers. With what they did against Buffalo, see whether or not again. I don't think the Raiders, because you've talked about how good the Steelers defense is and how good they should be. You think they should be the number one defense this year? If that's the case, if they put a lock on Derek Carr and them, you know, maybe the Steelers team will be. I don't think it's going to be the team that we saw last year go 11-0, 12-0, whatever. But I think this team would be much, much, much more improved. And then also 49ers, Eagles. You know, I want to see whether or not The Eagles win last week. Whether or not that was a fluke or not, we'll see. They'll be at home. Bring on the 49ers. This used to be, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, this used to be one of them rivalry type games. This used to be a good game that, you know, when Andy Reid was there, this was this was one of those type of games that, you know, fans had to tune in for. This was this used to be like a late afternoon primetime Fox game.
Going back to the Steelers, that defense is fantastic. And I do want to see if they can lock down the Raiders, because if they don't, maybe that says something about the Raiders' offense and team actually being pretty good this year. Also, the Steelers' offense should be good, but Ben Roethlisberger was horrendous. Ben Roethlisberger is not a good quarterback anymore. He has very good wide receivers. Juju Smith-Schuster is very solid. Chase Claypool, very solid. Deontay Johnson is very, very good. He threw for 188 yards on 32 passes. Just, I think if the Steelers would have been better off trying to find a quarterback, or at least bringing one in.
Well, they drafted quarterbacks, and they had Haskins on the team.
Yeah, but I don't think Haskins is that guy either. They're in a precarious situation because they thought their only option to keep it going was a – this reminds me
Should they look at bringing in Cam Newton?
I don't think Cam's arm's anything anymore.
Huh?
Cam struggled so mightily last year.
Well, he did have COVID last year.
Sure, but he struggled mightily last year. He's probably on the same page as Big Ben at this point. Just – this almost feels like the Saints last year, where it was the quarterback was the issue holding them back. Drew Brees, I will stand by. I love Drew Brees, you know me. He held the Saints back last year. I think Big Ben holds the Steelers back this year.
Well, a couple of days away, but of course we'll talk about it. But the Giants, Washington football team, Thursday Night Football. Of course, Chiefs fans should watch this game close attentive because we play both of these teams. We play Washington, I think they're week five. No, Washington is week six for the Chiefs, so that's going to be interesting. Yeah, Chiefs play out there at noon. So, yeah, we'll see. See how it goes.
We'll take a quick break. They'll come back, talk NFL more. Darren and Sterling here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. All right, Darren.
Yes, sir.
Who was your defensive MVP for the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday?
I mean, it's easy to say Chris Jones because he had two sacks, and any other game it would be, but it had to be Mike Hughes for me, man.
You think he's worth that sixth-round draft pick?
Oh, yeah. and the fact that, you know, he saved me a lot of grief off of a lot of grief and embarrassment for the Chiefs, you know, being able to win that game, hold on to win that game. He was my MVP.
He was great. Juan Thornhill came up huge late as well. That Tyrann Mathieu-esque play
Juan has been great. Yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, Juan Thornhill really – he's still, I think, getting back into his groove. I think it's still taking some time, but when he makes those plays, you go, wow, only a handful of safeties in the NFL can do that. I think Nick Bolton was very solid. Honestly, Anthony Hitchens had himself a very good game, quietly. I get it. The Browns were able to run a lot, but I don't necessarily blame Hitchens for a lot of that. That was more on the interior defensive line. Reed struggled, Derek Nnadi, Turk Wharton. They weren't getting a big push and honestly, I was a little disappointed with the defensive line outside of Chris Jones when it came to getting pressure, setting the edge, stopping the run. The running backs seem to just be automatically at the second level.
Got to ask this before we get off the air, but what were your thoughts on Orlando Brown? A lot of people are saying the struggles that he had. Of course, he did give up a sack. Lucas Niang gave up a sack. But, you know, Ricky, you give him a little, you know.
Leeway.
A little leeway. But what do you think about Orlando Brown's debut?
He was going against Myles Garrett, but he did give up five pressures. It wasn't good. I don't blame Orlando Brown. I'm not saying he is going to be bad, but it wasn't a good first game. I'm sure he will tell you that, and he will own it. Five pressures is bad. That's the most he's ever given up in a single game in his NFL career. So it's only going to come up from here, but he needs to improve on that.
How much of that is Patrick's fault?
At least one.
Oh, the sack was.
The sack was all on Patrick. He drifted back. It's going to take time. Orlando Brown is used to Lamar Jackson, who was more mobile, obviously. Different style of offense. He was a run-first guy. Now he's in a pass-first offense. It's going to take time for Orlando Brown.
And that's what he wanted.
No, I
No, I'm saying that's what he wanted.
It's going to be great for Orlando Brown Jr. It's just going to take time. I'm very excited to see how this NFL and how this offensive line progresses throughout this season. This is Darren and Sterling here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m.
Keep the stadium at Truman.
We're out.